Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Physicians who prescribe medication or gender-altering surgery to treat underage transgender youths seeking to transition would be penalized under planned legislation in the Ohio House. They could face felony charges and possible jail time for treating patients under the age of 18, even with parental consent. Supporters of the proposal say that such treatments are too extreme for an underage person. Opponents include leading medical groups, and they say that such decisions should be left to families and doctors who specialize in such care. Similar measures have been introduced in other states, including conservative South Dakota, where lawmakers last week voted it down. Jackie Borchardt is the Columbus Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Enquirer. She's been covering the issue at the State House. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
This sort of popped out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, this is a new one for the Ohio General Assembly. It is a new, I think, even a pretty fairly new topic. We did a couple years ago. Your listeners may remember there was a bathroom bill that was kicked around, and that didn't really go anywhere here. And so there was a press conference last week that the two bill sponsors had in advance of drafting the bill. So they were getting ready to send a letter out to the rest of the legislators to ask whether they would support such a bill. It's called a co-sponsor request. Mm-hmm. And so they had this press conference in advance even of that step.
And that happens from time to time. They're floating a trial balloon.
Yeah, I haven't talked to the sponsors as far as having the timing. It's not unusual to have a press conference before the bill is introduced.
Right.
Usually, if they do have it before it's formally filed, they have a copy of it. This was even earlier, which, again, it's rare, but I think in recent years, as these co-sponsor letters go out, sometimes they are leaked to the press. And then, you know, we want to write a story anyway. So this way, at least they're able to present, their argument for introducing the bill.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Two Ohio Republican House members have proposed legislation to establish penalties for doctors who prescribe or provide gender identity medical treatment. That could include, prescription medicine, or surgery to underage transgender youths. The announcement last week grabbed some national headlines and galvanized supporters and opponents of the plan backed by Representative Ron Hood. But I will say we invited Representative Ron Hood and Representative Bill Dean, both Republicans in the Ohio House, to be on the show. We did not get any response from their offices. We reached out to several groups that apparently support the legislation. No one was able to provide a guest today. So, we're sorry about that. My guest right now is Jackie Borchardt. She's Columbus Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Enquirer. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So what did Representative Hood and Representative Dean say to explain why they're doing this?
So they've said that they're calling this the Protect Vulnerable Children Act, and they're coming from a position where— And there were some parents at the press conference who spoke to this, where they believe that physicians are pressuring families to go forward with various treatments related to gender identity. And they kept mentioning surgery. However, the physicians that I've talked to and the medical associations that have taken a position on this all say that it is extremely rare for minors to have gender-affirming surgery, and especially genital surgery is not performed to children under 18, especially it's in the state of Ohio specifically, but just generally that is not a regular practice. And I'm sure your guest later will speak to that. But, you know, they were talking about how, some of these treatments could be irreversible, and there are situations where maybe the youth are not, maybe later they decide that they actually wanted to be the gender that they were born on their birth certificates, or they regret having surgery or having taken hormones later as they become adults and mature into adults. And so that's kind of their position, is that, you know, the minors are not able to make these kinds of decisions, and also that there's a sense that physicians are kind of rushing to go to these treatments as opposed to taking like a wait and see approach.
Did they have any evidence for that?
So there were two parents and a grandmother who spoke in support of the bill. However, they declined to give their names, mm-hmm. which for our journalistic ethics is we rarely use. I'll speak on behalf of the Inquirer, but we rarely use anonymous sources or pseudonyms to refer to sources. But when we do, it's we know the source. We know who that person is. We've vetted them. We've
but
vetted their story.
They wouldn't even share their names with you
right.
at all.
Right.
Okay. And why?
So, I did include this in my story. You know, they say that this is such a hot topic and there is so much pressure against their position that they fear retribution at work, in their communities from activists that oppose the bill. I think in some cases, too, they have children who are at some stage in this process and maybe, don't want to do anything that would further harm their child
or yeah. that kind of a thing. Why penalize the physicians? The parents seem to be left out of this, even with parental permission, which is surprising. I guess, of all things.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of takes a page out of the abortion legislation book here in that the penalties are aimed at the physicians. And, what we've seen when a similar tack is taken in other legislation, physicians are saying this is what we do. This is our standard of care. This is where the science leads us. And now you have the legislature coming in and telling us otherwise. There are like 20 some bills that target transgender youth healthcare floating around in state legislatures, and they all kind of do it a little bit differently. Some do propose criminal penalties for physicians like Ohio's does. Some just limit it to civil actions that the families can take. Ohio's may do both. We don't have the bill details yet, but that's what's been proposed for Ohio anyway. And then some states have put this under like the definition of child abuse. So in that case, the parents would be subject to penalties through the state's child abuse statute. So it's all targeting the same issue, but they're each going at it a little bit differently.
What's the reaction been so far?
Well, I think, the instant reaction there was pretty strong from the Ohio LGBTQ community uh-huh. and in opposition to this. And I was talking with Grant Stancliffe at Equality Ohio. And I think, a point that he brought up is even if this bill never gets introduced or doesn't go anywhere, just the fact that now it has become a discussion point is harmful and is something that they will be working to fight disinformation about, to assure people in the LGBTQ community that they are valued, that even though, they're going to be discussed as this bill goes through the legislative process to they may hear some harmful things or incorrect things. And so that's just going to be work they're going to have to do regardless of what happens to the bill.
Even physicians are divided on the issue. Your story had opposing viewpoints from two doctors, both from Nationwide Children's Hospital. What did they have to say?
Well, so the first doctor was at the press conference. He was the only physician there. And he mentioned that he worked at Nationwide, but he was speaking on behalf of himself as a physician and a father. But I asked him afterward, he was saying that these treatments are not proven. We don't know the long-term track record of what happens to these kids as they become full-grown adults. And I asked him after the press conference, if he had any firsthand experience, if he had treated any youth that had brought gender identity issues to him, and he said no, he hadn't. He's actually a neonatologist who works with babies.
He's not an expert in the field,
Right. And I think, you know, South Dakota just went through this process and it passed one chamber there. And there were a handful of doctors who came and testified in South Dakota from around the country who opposed this. The physician who happened to be at the press conference in support of the bill just doesn't have that firsthand experience. The other physician I spoke to is Dr. Scott Leibowitz at Nationwide Children's, who works in their Thrive program for transgender youth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was basically pushing back on the thrust of the press conference being so focused on surgery, given that that's not it's not an automatic thing that they do. excuse me. And also that kind of the standard of care at the state's various children's hospitals that have specialized programs for this, the standard of care is all-encompassing. It's counseling. There's a social worker involved. The family is involved in the decisions. And so I'm sure that we'll hear more about that shortly.
We did invite both of those physicians from Nationwide Children's Hospital to the conversation today. And Nationwide responded for them, saying that they weren't going to have anybody speak on this issue until the legislation's introduced. Have you gotten any sense from leadership in the House about this?
I haven't had a chance to ask House Speaker Larry Householder. So I don't know where he would be on this, or if this is something that he would support, or if something that he just kind of wants to let go through the committee process. But I mean, we don't even have a bill yet, so
yeah, right.
maybe premature for that.
I want to grab somebody who called in. Sue in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sue.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to put a little asterisk. I think it was Jackie that said she spoke with a man representing the LGBT community. And that's not all of us. I'm a lesbian. There are a lot of women, lesbians, feminists, who do not support the trans ideology, and certainly not allowing children to harm themselves. I'm going to say prefrontal lobe development.
Before they're grown-ups.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's not accurate to say that the LGBT community, we're not a monolith.
Well, understood. That's always, you know, okay. I get what you're saying, and I appreciate it. It's a good point. The community is not uniformly against this, but the organizations that you've talked to, Jackie?
Yeah, and thanks, Sue. I really appreciate you calling in and bringing that up. I think I had mentioned that in reference to just describing who Equality Ohio is, in that they're a lobbying group that works on those issues at the State House.
Okay. Thank you, Sue, for that call. Jackie Borchardt, thanks for joining us today and kicking off the conversation. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Jackie Borchardt. She's Columbus Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Enquirer. We've been talking about, and we'll continue to talk about, a proposal to penalize physicians who prescribe medication or gender-altering surgery to treat underage transgender youth seeking to transition, even with parental approval. And by the way, just to underscore, it's extremely rare, in fact, unknown, that children, minors, undergo surgical changes.
I think I had mentioned specifically the genital surgery. You know, the top surgery. At least the physicians that I spoke with last week, there are some teens who do that, but in cases where it's something that you know, they've been they have time or significant experience already identifying as that gender before they have that surgery, and it's still fairly rare, is my understanding.
Okay, gotcha. Jackie Borchardt, Columbus Bureau Chief for the Cincinnati Enquirer. We'll continue our conversation. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Doctors who prescribe medication or gender-altering surgery to treat underage transgender youths seeking to transition would be penalized under planned legislation in the Ohio House. They could face felony charges and possible jail time for treating patients under the age of 18, even with parental permission. Supporters of the proposal say that such treatments are too extreme. Opponents include leading medical groups, and they say such decisions should be left to families and doctors who specialize in such care. Similar measures have been introduced in other states, including conservative South Dakota, where lawmakers last week voted it down. We invited the sponsors of the proposed legislation, Representative Ron Hood and Representative Bill Dean, both Republicans, to be on today's show, but they never responded to our invitations. We also reached out to several groups that support the legislation, and none were available able to provide a guest today. Dr. Crystal Cole is the medical director at the Center for Gender Affirming Medicine at Akron Children's Hospital. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
Dr. Joanna Olson Kennedy is the medical director at the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Olson Kennedy, one of the issues that supporters of this legislation bring up is that people, you know, minors, young people are still forming their identity. They don't know necessarily what they want. They know what they think they want, and could decide prematurely or permanently to change their bodies and end fertility and that sort of a thing. How do you respond? I mean, what do we know about the psychology of this and the developmental implications here?
I think that it's a reasonable argument to make about some things, but I think it's important to look at what we already know and has been scientifically explored about gender and people's understanding and knowledge of their gender. So in the 1970s, there was a lot of work done on this, and what was found was that people knew their gender. They were able to identify their gender, and they were able to categorize their gender by the age of 4 and sometimes younger. So when we apply the principles of understanding gender differently to people who are transgender and people who are not transgender, it's not accurate, it's not scientific, it's not based in science. What few people understand is because we live in a world and we perpetuate a society where the expectation is that you're going to be cisgender or your gender identity is going to match your assigned sex at birth, there are lots and lots of cues and lots of teaching and a lot of societal messages about that. For kids who are trans, they don't have a pathway that's carved for them, and so they need to figure out their gender outside of that rubric, which is why sometimes people are able to understand this and talk about it when they're 3 or 4 or 5. But some people, the majority of people, put their gender puzzle together when they're in adolescence. And so there is a difference between making decisions about, let's say, a school you want to go to or an instrument you want to play or something like that. That's a very different decision than coming to understand your gender, which doesn't require myelination of the frontal lobe, which, by the way, doesn't occur until sometimes the early to mid-20s. So are we going to then say, you know, that we shouldn't let people drive until their frontal lobe is myelinated? That seems like it might have some potential consequences far more than the things that we're talking about.
And when you talk about myelinated, you mean matured?
Yeah, so in order for your brain to be completely, let's say, formed or completely functioning on all of its pistons, I guess would be the way to say it, the myelination occurs in the brain from the back to the front. And so the front of the brain is responsible for things like executive function, right? Which are things like, if I do this, then this will happen, or historically I've done this and this has happened. So it's the piece of your brain that can put together these pieces of things like that, like thinking forward. And those are not things that we ask any person who isn't trans to have intact before they make decisions about their gender. We don't ask people not to run for prom king or not to run for prom queen because we don't know if they're girls or boys yet. We don't ask people to not play on, you know, boys' soccer teams because we don't really know that they're boys until they're in their mid-20s. Right? Those questions that we ask of trans youth are not appropriate to ask for any youth.
Dr. Cole, what is, can you give us a little, a thumbnail on what the process is, how it works? I mean, somebody comes to you with their child, and how does it start as far as when there becomes medical involvement?
Great question. So with many clinics that are established in children's hospitals, they generally take a multidisciplinary approach. And what that means is that there's medical providers, which may include pediatricians and pediatric endocrinologists. There are mental health care providers, not necessarily because we're treating this as a mental illness, but just because there are increased mental health risks with this population. And, you know, transitions in general are very difficult for families and patients. And we, as part of our program, we also have social work, because a lot of times there's a lot of other social needs and legal needs that a lot of times these families and patients need. And so when they initially come to us, we kind of see where they are as far as their gender. You know, how long has the family known? How long has the patient known? This is obviously dependent on the patient's age as well. Mm-hmm. Generally, our social worker reaches out to get kind of a basic story. And when we meet them in their clinic, we have a wraparound visit where they meet with a medical provider, they meet with our mental health provider, and they meet with our social worker. And at that point, we establish what their needs are. Occasionally, they just need social support. They need established with, you know, some support groups in the community. They may need some assistance with schools and the ability to use preferred bathrooms or using preferred gender pronouns and preferred name. Sometimes they may need help with menstrual suppression. Other times, if they're in the early stages of puberty, they would be eligible for puberty blockers at that point, and that would be something that we could arrange. And then those who are older teenagers, if they meet criteria, would be eligible for gender-affirming hormones such as estrogen and testosterone.
But I haven't heard you mention surgery.
Yes. At this program, we primarily address pediatric patients. Generally, in our area, in the state of Ohio, most patients will not pursue surgery until the age of, and a lot of surgeons won't do surgery until the patients are 18 and older, or at least 16 and older for top surgery, meaning, you know, breast augmentation or breast reduction or mastectomy. So at this point, we have found that we haven't needed a surgeon to be part of our multidisciplinary team. However, if a patient, we do see patients up to 25, and if they do have surgical needs at an older age, then we do have people we would refer to. But at this point, we really haven't had any patients that would be considered minors that have had any desire for surgery. And generally in this area, in this part of Ohio, and I believe Ohio in general, we generally surgery is reserved for older patients.
That's Crystal Cole. She's medical director for the Center for Gender Affirming Medicine at Akron Children's Hospital. Also with us from Los Angeles, Dr. Joanna Olson Kennedy. She is medical director at the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call. We're talking about a plan to introduce legislation that would penalize doctors who prescribe medication, as was just described by Crystal Cole, or gender-altering surgery to treat underage transgender youth seeking to transition. The doctors could face felony charges and possible jail time for treating patients under the age of 18, even with parental permission. 614-292-9000. 8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Before I get to some comments from callers, Dr. Olson Kennedy, as far as what Dr. Cole described, is that pretty much the protocol, or are there, is there anything you want to mention that where you depart?
I think that most clinics that are taking care of youth are set up in the same way that we just heard described, and I think those are or some variation of those where the primary goal of the interactions is understanding where people are, where families are, where young people are, what their needs are, and referring appropriately. I think that it's very easy to fall into the conversation about genital surgery, but that really doesn't happen for people who are under the age of 18. But I think it makes for a lot of good, stirring up a lot of emotions in people. But I think it's really important to understand that, you know, the most common age that people are seeking services is 15 or 16. It's not 5. And so I think there can, you know, most of the people that propose this kind of legislation or come out really strongly against providing affirming care don't do the work and don't understand the work. And that's extremely frustrating. And a lot of times the physicians that they get to back these kinds of position statements or even legal legislation are people, doctors that don't do this work.
Which is the case in Ohio last week. Right.
Absolutely.
Let's hear from Zach. Zach in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Zach.
Hey, Ann, a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I actually used to work at Nationwide Children's in the Thrive Clinic. So I'm not speaking for Nationwide Children's or that clinic. But I will say, through my experience, this is not something that the kids and families go through haphazardly or lightly. As your guests have said, there is a lot that they go through before they are actually able to even get medication in this area. So I kind of think that the bill that is going to be presented, it's a little outlandish. It's a little much. And I think they would be behooved if they were able to actually speak with people who worked in the field rather than just to pass this bill with so many assumptions.
Zach, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure.
When we talk about the people, first of all, I want to ask both of you, Dr. Cole and Dr. Olson Kennedy, maybe start with you, Dr. Cole. Is there a typical when we're talking about this population?
That's a great question, and the answer is absolutely not. Every time I step into a patient's room, the mix of patients, their ages, their socioeconomic status, their race, ethnicity, you know, whether they come from a single parent home or a typical, you know, nuclear family, it's all very different. You know, so I can't really say there is a typical patient. They come from all walks of life.
And Dr. Olson Kennedy, in your experience, how much time has passed before families come to the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development? Have they mulled this for months or years, or what do we know about that?
Yes.
They don't jump and run over to the Trans Youth Health and Development Center.
Well, I want to echo what we just heard, that, you know, there is no typical pathway.
Okay.
But I do also want to talk about and stress the importance that if people are putting their gender puzzle together in adolescence or later, they have had a period that I call coming in, where they are in private trying to figure out what's happening with their gender. And when that does happen and they disclose that information to their parent or parents, that parent or those parents have a process of coming in where they are trying to figure out what's going on and get information. It is absolutely the case that every single person that's ever walked in the clinic to seek services has had a process before coming in. Sometimes they're early in that process, particularly the family members might be, and they're coming for information.
Uh-huh.
But those aren't people that are coming for medical intervention. They're coming for information as part of their coming in process. I think it's really unfortunate when there is an assumption that people woke up on a Wednesday and on Thursday they're in our clinics. That's just not how it works.
Let's see, David in Worthington, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Hi there. My daughter was assigned male gender at birth, but at about the age of 4, she let it be known to us that she was in fact a girl, and she has now been living for about a year as a girl, and she has spent a lot of time at the Thrive at Nationwide Children's, and we are watching with a sense of foreboding as this legislation seems to be gathering steam, not only here, but around the country. And I fear that this is based on ignorance and people who simply don't even know what it means to be transgender or gender fluid or any of these things.
How soon, David, did you seek outside consultation, or if you have at all? I mean, what was that process like for you?
It took a number of months before it's not one of those things where you just wake up and suddenly realize, you know, a 4-year-old child is not in a position to just sit you down and say, listen, I need you to know I'm a member of the LGBTQ community.
Right, right.
You know, it was.
It's not politicalism. They're just what they're feeling.
And they just don't even have the language
right.
for it. You know, and so what she did was it started by her wanting to dress as Moana for Halloween. And then she just kept wanting to wear that outfit and then told us that she wanted to wear dresses for dress up. And so we started getting her dresses. And then one day she wanted to wear it out, out at COSI.
Uh-huh.
And slowly we began to realize that this was not just a phase. This was not just a fad. And so we did reach out to the folks at Thrive, and we spoke with a therapist there. We also started attending a support group at Sentero for parents of children who are LGBTQIA and so forth. And, you know, it's been a process over months. And we have slowly begun to understand what does it really mean to have a child who believes that she is a girl, even though to outward appearances, at least biologically, she is not. And the folks at Thrive have been incredibly helpful in helping us to understand what this process is going to entail, and helped her also to sort of learn, you know, what does it mean for her? How does she recognize in herself who she is? She still has boy clothes in her room just in case someday she decides she wants to dress as a boy again. But that doesn't happen on a daily basis.
Thank you, David, for the call. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Thank you so much. We are going to continue our conversation with Crystal Cole. She's medical director for the Center for Gender Affirming Medicine at Akron Children's Hospital. And also Joanna Olson Kennedy. She's medical director at the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development in Los Angeles. We're talking about a proposed legislation in the Ohio House that would penalize doctors who prescribe medication or gender altering surgery to treat underage transgender youths seeking to transition. So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, please give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about a bill that is going to be introduced in the Ohio House that would penalize doctors who prescribe medication or gender-altering surgery to treat underage transgender youths seeking to transition. Doctors could face felony charges and possible jail time for treating patients under the age of 18, even with parental permission. Supporters of the proposal say that such treatments are too extreme for somebody underage. Opponents include leading medical groups, and they say such decisions should be left to families and doctors who specialize in care. We have invited the expected sponsors of the legislation to join the show. They did not respond to our request. We've also reached out to organizations that support this kind of legislation, and they were unable to provide somebody to join us. My guests right now are Crystal Cole. She's medical director for the Center for Gender Affirming Medicine at Akron Children's Hospital, and also Joanna Olson Kennedy. She's medical director at the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development in Los Angeles. The Trevor Project, the national advocacy group for LGBTQ youth, reports that anti-transgender rhetoric and legislation causes spikes in crisis calls. For example, crisis calls more than doubled after President Trump tweeted a ban on transgender troops in the military. Does that hold with what you're seeing in your clinic in Los Angeles, Dr. Olson Kennedy?
Absolutely. There have been many parents and young people who are extremely concerned, even though we live in California and it is highly unlikely that any kind of legislation like that would even be considered in this state. People are very worried. It also is going to impact people's decisions around where they're going to go to college or where they're going to move to potentially when they're living outside of their parents' house. It has been a very difficult 3 years for the trans community and their loved ones, and it continues to get more hostile with legislation like this being introduced in so many places.
Dr. Cole?
Yes. Well, I would say that we haven't had a lot of parents bring that up as of yet. I know a lot of parents have concerns in general about the political climate in this country, and when things like that come about, they do worry about their children's ability to have rights to approved health care and, about their children's safety. But we generally... maybe because our clinic has only been open for a little less than a year, we haven't had much talk in regards to, the political climate in this country as of yet.
Tell me, Dr. Cole, what triggered the opening of your clinic? What was the tipping point?
So a lot of our patients that come to Akron Children's are very loyal to our hospital. And working in the adolescent medicine department, we have a lot of patients who identify as LGBTQ+. And they come here for multiple medical problems. We have great subspecialists in multiple specialties. But one thing that was lacking is gender-affirming care. And a lot of our families would have to drive an hour or longer to get those services. And we were just responding to a need that was expressed by our patient population. And that there are other places in the state and in the country that were providing similar care. And knowing that Akron Children's, wants to provide the best care possible for our patients, we decided we would do the same.
Charles and Ostrander, you're on the air. Hi, Charles.
Hi. I'm guessing that this group of adolescents has a high suicide risk to begin with. I'm guessing that maybe that suicide risk goes down when they get into a program like you're discussing at Akron with counseling and so forth. And I'm wondering if you think that if they do have a high suicide risk, is the suicide risk going to rise when a House bill like this gets passed, basically shutting the door in their face?
Dr. Olson Kennedy, thoughts about the rate of suicide among youth in the LGBTQ community at large and what something like this means?
I think it's a pretty well-known, understood fact that the suicide attempt rate and the suicidal ideology, thinking about it and other self-harm is astronomical in the LGBTQ community of youth as a whole. It's particularly bad in transgender youth. I think that it is possible that even proposing legislation like this is extremely damaging for young people. And when young people cannot see a future for themselves, it puts them at higher risk for thinking about and attempting suicide. So I do think that that's a possibility. And I do think that if laws like this are passed, it's going to be even worse than just the idea of laws like this being proposed.
Charles, thanks for that call. I want to turn now to Michael in Columbus. You're on the air, Michael. Hi.
Hi, Anne. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You bet.
So I really appreciated hearing from the parents, and it's really heartwarming to sort of know that there are parents who are sort of affirming their children's identities. I work with youth in the college level. So, and my area of work, I worked at multiple public institutions, and my area of research is about queer and trans students. And the thing that we see is that students, first of all, when they don't have the support services at home, that is really damaging to who they are and how they see themselves and then how they succeed in college. And so my comment is really about the downstream effects of things like this legislation, because I'm thinking instead of empowering our community, I mean, let's face it, our doctors, a lot of doctors are really misinformed themselves, and this is going to make this even worse. And so I'm just thinking, like, this is where even proposing something like this sends a lot of messages to whether our youth are valued or not. And I don't think the people who are proposing it are actually in touch with the community, because a lot of folks, like the parents who called, like, you sit with your children, you talk with them, and you know, the same way that you ask them what they want to wear every morning, mm-hmm. they're capable of sort of talking about who they are. And like I said, I see the effects of not being affirmed later on when people are really struggling with making sense of who they are. And so, I think this is very, very damaging to our youth.
Michael, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Both the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics oppose legislation like what's being considered in Ohio, and they take positions that are strongly affirming of those struggling with gender identity. What are the ethics, Dr. Cole, of doctors that perform gender reassignment surgeries on patients of any age? Are there any guidelines?
Yes, there are guidelines. The WPATH, which is the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, has well-established guidelines that have had multiple editions and have been in publication for a number of years. And that is generally what we use to, as our guide for performing surgeries and whatnot. Also, you know, there is a process generally that goes along with being considered for surgery. And one of those is there's a medical evaluation as well as a mental health evaluation that's part of that. And so that's usually it's not a you show up in the doctor's office and the next week they schedule you surgery. You have to have an established diagnosis of gender dysphoria or gender identity disorder. And have an established relationship with a mental health provider, generally speaking, and a medical provider prior to a surgeon considering you for surgery.
Is it still considered a disorder?
Or
is that just semantics?
It's more semantics than anything. There is talk that in the future, the idea of gender dysphoria, because a lot of patients don't necessarily have dysphoria necessarily, but it's more of a gender incongruence, and that is kind of the general direction of where this is going. However, the reason that we do this is because the risks are very high for this population. In some patients, you know, that you mentioned about that someone earlier called about suicide risk, suicidal ideation. It's been reported as high as suicidal ideation has been reported as high as 50% in this population. And suicide attempt has been reported as high as 40% in this population. So And one of the biggest predictors of success and, you know, mental health outcomes and health outcomes of these patients is having a supportive environment. And so that's one of the things that, you know, as a whole, medical providers who do this care, we really strive for.
And Dr. Olson Kennedy, how long has the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development been up and running in Los Angeles?
Doing trans youth care in the 90s.
Okay.
So the mid to late 90s. I've been doing this work for 14 years. And I just wanted to talk about a couple of things? First of all, I think sure. I said suicide ideology. That's not what I meant. I meant suicidal ideation.
Ideation, yes. Yeah, I understood what you mean. Yeah, but go ahead.
I think just reading too much about ideology right now.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to jump in on what Dr. Cole was talking about. It is important for people listening to know that the categorization of gender identity disorder is gone from the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Illness, and was replaced when it went to the fifth version as gender dysphoria.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really important because it is a maybe subtle thing for the listeners, but I do think it's critical that we are not pathologizing identity, but that we are talking about the impact of experience that is experienced by a lot of people with that incongruence. And so when we talk about what we're addressing with medical interventions, we're talking about gender dysphoria or the distress that people experience. We could have a whole million-hour conversation right. about addressing people's needs through a distress model and how that might not be the best way. But I do think those are some critical distinctions that are important.
There's two questions I want to get into in the short amount of time that we have left. And one is, and I guess I asked you about the how long you've been up and running there in Los Angeles, Dr. Olson Kennedy, because in your experience, how is there any, what would be the incidence of people changing their minds after they've had surgery or after they've started using, you know, medication? That kind of a thing?
The number is really low. I want to have absolute clarity about what that question means mm-hmm. because I think we lump everything together
yeah.
as changing your mind, but I do want people to understand that this is historically true of the trans community, even if you look back to the late 1800s, early 1900s. That people make different decisions, different strategic decisions around how to address their gender if their gender doesn't align with their assigned sex at birth. And so when we talk about people who maybe make different decisions around interventions, maybe that means they had intended to only do medical interventions for a certain amount of time to get some changes. Maybe they decided that medical interventions were not the mechanism to address what their experiences.
Uh-huh.
And there have been people who've stopped medication simply because they have expressed that it's just too hard,
uh-huh.
that the world does not accommodate trans experience. The world is hostile towards trans people, and that their decision around that is it's just too hard to move forward with making these alterations to their physicality. So I want to be really mindful about when we ask this
yeah.
question, change their mind,
yeah.
that we're not necessarily talking about people whose gender is unstable.
Mm-hmm.
There may be people like that, but it's exceptionally rare. It's very, very rare. We have a handful of people who have made different decisions. But I think when we model this as people going back, people don't go back in their lives.
Right.
They move forward.
Okay. Well, I thank you so much for that distinction. Dr. Joanna Olson Kennedy, Medical Director at the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development in Los Angeles. Thanks for your time as well.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Crystal Cole, Medical Director for the Center for Gender Affirming Medicine at Akron Children's Hospital. Thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.